Thanks, Mr. Chairman. As we all know, the world is experiencing one of the most severe financial crises in modern history, with its epicenter in the U.S. and spillover effects on major financial centers all around the world. The correction of asset values, the deleveraging of the financial system is so strong that it has systemic implications on the soundness and safety of the entire world economy. Governments, central banks, regulatory authorities are acting on several fronts, injecting liquidity, recapitalizing, restructuring financial institutions, stopping risky behavior that could further precipitate markets into depression. Beyond this, the realization that an overgrown financial system has developed bubbles based on poor assessment of risk and questionable use of ample, maybe too ample flows of liquidity at the time, has been raising questions in countries and internationally about the need to provide a stronger skeleton to the international financial architecture. Seen from our side, the side of the real economy, the financial crisis that we experience is, in my view, a wake-up call, indicating that the world economy cannot grow above the limits of its real production, and that feeding it by debt and by liquidity may only provoke severe corrections. Now, this is not the first shock witnessed by our multilateral trading system. Despite its young age, the WTO has already faced previous episodes of a financial crisis and has shown resilience by keeping markets open during periods of financial or external payment crisis. The multilateral trading system has shown that it can give a chance to crisis-stricken countries to recover through trade. However, we've also learned from these periods that to do so, access to trade finance at affordable rates must be maintained in such critical times to ensure that international trade can continue to play its shock-absorbing role. After the Asian crisis, and in cases the brutal interruption of trade credit lines by international banks to some crisis-stricken countries, the WTO, in partnership with the IMF and the World Bank, formed an informal group of experts from regional development banks, credit insurance agencies, and international commercial banks who are involved in providing trade finance facilities of one kind or another. Under the banner of coherence, the aim is to seek options to deal with the scarcity of trade finance during periods of crisis and what appeared to be a trend to withdraw from smaller developing countries' markets. Since then, the WTO hosted meetings periodically to discuss means to address these shortcomings, the last one in April this year. At the time, we sensed rising costs and liquidity shortages, which were already hitting trade finance for particular developing countries and least developed countries. The meeting I chaired this morning with the same panel of representatives of private banks, international financial institutions, and export credit agencies has confirmed that the market for trade finance has severely deteriorated over the last 6 months, and particularly since September. Two key causes that were identified. One is a shortage of liquidity to finance trade credits. The second is a general reassessment of risks caused as much by the financial crisis as by the slowing down of the world economy, and it is there that these two cycles interact obviously with one another. These problems are being felt everywhere, but most acutely by traders and banks in emerging market economies. And the view expressed this morning by these practitioners is that the situation is likely to deteriorate further in the months to come. Now, some of these difficulties were already apparent in April when I chaired the last meeting of this group. And following up on that April meeting, some steps have already been taken to respond to the situation. Let me draw your attention in particular to the announcement yesterday by the president of the World Bank that he intends to propose to the executive board of the World Bank IFC a tripling of the ceiling to $3 billion of the trade finance guarantees available under the IFC Trade Finance Facilitation Program. I think this is a remarkable example of a quick reaction by an IFI to current market developments and demand for aid for trade in action. The Bern Union, which regroups export credit agencies, has also informed us that the export credit agencies have been stepping in much more actively in recent months. Collectively, they've increased their business by more than 30% in the last 12 months, with an acceleration since the summer. And we had confirmation that this increase in their activity is being backed by some national governments, Germany, Japan, Hong Kong, China, for instance. The message from some other organizations present, and specifically regional development banks with similar programs to that of the World Bank IFC, EBRD, Inter-American Development Bank, African Development Bank, Islamic Development Bank, Asian Development Bank, is that they too could do much more to respond in the market if their executive boards would also raise their ceilings on this kind of financing activity. And I think this is a clear message for WTO members. You present here, contact your finance and development officials who represent you on the boards of regional development banks to promote their greater involvement in trade finance activities as a sort of lifeline for economic activity in many countries. A sort of coherence not only in speeches but also in action. Now, what still needs to be done? Stemming from this discussion, a priority task is to enhance the capacity to mitigate the effects of the increased perception of risks and to provide the market with earmarked earmarked liquidity for trade finance. And from that point of view, both the international financial institutions and the export credit agencies have the possibility to expand their contributions to cover risk and to provide additional liquidity under existing instruments. So there is no need for inventing some sort of new instrument. The instruments are there, but they need to be enhanced. And this will not happen without public authorities stepping in to provide them with more support. The market currently estimates the liquidity gap in trade finance at about $25 billion. Now, this, of course, is a sizable sum, but not enormous relative to the amounts that central banks have found it necessary to inject into financial and banking markets in the past couple of months. Commercial bankers believe that this gap could be filled reasonably comfortably through increased co-sharing partnerships with international financial institutions and export credit agencies to the extent that the trade finance and insurance programs of these institutions are supported by their shareholders, which again is you, the member governments. Second task that needs to be viewed over more of the medium term is to improve mechanisms for information sharing, risk assessment techniques, and data collection on trade finance, where, to be frank, the statistical capital we have is extremely thin. Doing this would help expanding the scope for co-financing trade between private banks themselves and between the banks and public sector institutions, IFIs and export credit agencies. We heard some concrete proposals on how to move ahead on this issue this morning. Naturally, this is not a task for the WTO, but we do have something to contribute, in my view, and we shall continue to work with the various actors on these issues. The costs of taking these steps and actions is not exaggerated. The market for trade finance is one of the most secure areas of banking and insurance activities, and it has a strong multiplier effect on trade. You don't need 10 mathematicians to understand how a letter of credit works. And letters of credit are, in many cases, the only way to make sure that trade will flow. And at the time of decelerating trade and economic growth, investing resources to keep trade finance flowing has a vital role to play. Contrast this with the cost of inaction. The countries most vulnerable to shortages of trade finance are the emerging market economies on whom we are counting to sustain trade and economic growth as the developed world slows down to zero, hopefully not below zero. So this is, I believe, a useful message for the G20 meeting in Washington on the 15th of November. The world economy is slowing, and we are seeing trade decrease. If trade finance is not tackled, we run the risk of further exacerbating this downward spiral. the global slowdown, whether it's called a recession in some parts of the world, a slump elsewhere, will last for some time, and it will affect all countries. And we simply cannot say that globalization is benefiting emerging countries when developed economies' global demand is expanding, and that no effect will be felt when such demand falls. At the national level, there will be more risks, more job losses, more bankruptcies, and there will inevitably be demand for greater safety nets, greater security, greater protection, which is legitimate, but there will also be demands for protectionist measures. Now, the political message that WTO members should send, in my view, both inside the multilateral trading system and outside, is that the WTO is ready to take this challenge with a strong sense of collective responsibility and solidarity. Members should resist a call for protectionist measures in a globalized world. One protection is another's lost opportunity. And everyone's protection, the sort of beggar my thy neighbor that we saw in the 1930s, is, we know that, and we discussed that recently in this room, a recipe for a severe contraction of international trade, depressed growth and rising unemployment against the sort of situation we've already seen. This was evident as a big risk during the Asian and Latin American financial crisis in the 90s. Governments then understood that keeping markets open was part of the solution, not of the problem, and at the time WTO GATT, WTO disciplines, helped resisting the calls for closing trade. The second message is, of course, to oppose financial chaos by further organized, regulated, balanced trade opening through the Doha Round, and while countries struggle with the design of global financial rules, they could send a positive signal by better regulating international trade through the completion of the round, which will lead me, Mr. Chairman, to an unsurprising conclusion. After 7 years of negotiations, we've come a long way in our collective endeavor. My sense is, and you already heard me saying this, that we are not that far away from our objective of concluding the round, even if a number of tough knots remain to be cracked, notably in the agriculture and industrial modalities, which would be a stepping stone towards a final deal. My sense is that we can achieve modalities in these two areas by the end of this year. I remain of the view that this is doable, and it's probably even more desirable now than a year ago. But we now need to do it. The process to get there is well known. Good old recipe of bottom-up transparency, inclusiveness, but above all, a common desire to mitigate the impact on your people, the severe deterioration of their economic and hence their social conditions. This concludes my introductory statement, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.